Chris Sims.
And I'm Todd McKay.
And this is the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. We're dedicated to lower taxes, less waste, and more accountable government. Here's what we have coming up on this episode. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau just raised the federal carbon tax in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're going to take a deep dive into BC's carbon tax experiment. And we've got a Waste Watch story about bureaucrats investigating an illegal gambling ring at a senior center.
But first, we need to talk about some charges that are hitting shipments of face masks and other protective equipment. So this is the equipment we're all seeing on the news every day. Doctors and nurses are wearing masks. They're wearing protective equipment to make sure that they can keep people safe when they're caring for them during this COVID-19 crisis. These are really important products, and they're in desperately short supply.
They really are. Everyone is looking for masks right now. I know even people that are trying to go to work and go to grocery stores are wanting to wear masks now. I'm making some myself, and my friends are asking me to help them make them as well. So everybody's looking for these masks. We've even seen images of Ontario Premier Doug Ford personally delivering masks to medical workers. We've also seen things like that manufacturer, 3M. They're suing people for reselling their masks at ridiculous prices. And really, nothing gets blood boiling faster than overcharging for masks right now.
Yeah, and speaking of blood boiling, I've got a clip that I'd like to play for you.
I've been buying masks from people my first order at $1.25 because it included the customs excise tax. So I've already been a victim of it, and I could have bought a whole bunch more.
So that was Stuart Young. He's the mayor of Langford, BC. That's near Victoria on Vancouver Island. He's been trying to buy masks and other protective equipment for people who need it in his town, people who work for the town, people around the town. He wants that equipment to keep people safe in his community. But he took a look at the bills and the quotes that he's been getting back, and they've included some line items that he's really not happy about. An 18% tariff. So that's essentially an 18% federal tax on these goods when you're bringing them into the country. So for one quote he showed us, that tariff totaled $57,000 on a total bill of about $300,000.
Why would the federal government charge an 18% tariff, an import tax, on masks at a time like this?
That's exactly what Mayor Young was wondering. So he sent a letter to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as well as BC Premier John Horgan, asking for these tariffs to be removed. At the moment when we're recording this, he hasn't received a reply to those letters in about a week. But he also sent that letter to us at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. And we have our own investigative journalist. His name is James Wood. And he called the mayor back and started digging.
What did James find out?
Well, first of all, we found out there is indeed an 18% tariff on masks and lots of other protective equipment. So we called the Canadian Border Services Agency because it administers these tariffs. Mm-hmm. It really didn't provide us with any answers, though. It pointed to an online link to an order in council the government had passed that suggested there could be waivers on some of these tariffs. So it came with a detailed application, though, because you had to get approval from Health Canada.
Oh, man.
So then we started doing some more digging. We found a list of only 12 approved importers on Health Canada's website. So we sent a whole bunch of questions to Health Canada, the Department of Finance, Canadian Border Services Agency. None of them have provided any significant answers. So really, at this point, it seems to boil down to two choices. Number one, pay the 18% tariff. Or number two, wade through all of this paperwork to try to get the waiver if you even know it exists.
That sounds like just stereotypical government runaround, like a big snarl of red tape, just gumming up the works, especially at a time like this. But is there a chance that we're missing something here?
Maybe. We're not experts in import-export rules. But here's the thing. We spoke to some of the importers who are working with Mayor Young, and they're running into this too. They're getting hit with tariffs at the border, and they're getting no answers. So maybe we're in the dark, but the guys who know about this stuff, they're in the dark too. Hmm. Importer Wolfgang Richter told us that he's frustrated and he wants the government to get out of the way so we can bring in this equipment to help people here in Canada. And even if the government has some kind of waiver process, it's still a problem if importers like Wolfgang don't even know about it. People selling masks right now can sell them anywhere in the world. at the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm.
If people trying to bring them into Canada run into any kind of roadblocks, they can find customers in a lot of other countries right now. We can't be bogging things down with this kind of nonsense.
No, exactly. And that's where this has really become an accountability question right now. The government owes us these answers. Why is it charging an 18% tariff on anything that we need to get through the COVID-19 crisis, frankly? And if it's going to have some kind of approval process to waive these tariffs, then why isn't it getting the word out and making sure that the process is simple and quick for these importers? And when people like Mayor Young have questions, why aren't they getting them answered right away? The bottom line, Canadians need personal protective equipment, stuff like masks. In at least some cases, Ottawa is making it more expensive and more complicated.
Well, that's exactly how Mayor Young feels. I want to play another clip for you, but I should warn you, it's got some salty language in it. Now, we bleeped out some of that specific terminology, if you know what I mean. But the mayor's obviously pretty frustrated by this. And here's what he said when we told him about the waiver process.
God almighty, it takes forever. I bet you they're still charging it at the border because they still haven't figured out how not to charge it. You know what I mean? The government says and then it never happens, right?
Wow. Okay. I think we need to leave listeners with two things here. First, if you're going to try to import masks and things like that, there should be a simple way to get that 18% tariff waived. We've included links in the show notes to government information and forms that we managed to find. And second, we're going to stay on top of this. It's not over. James is going to keep digging and we're going to keep pressure on government because it is silly and outrageous for them to be charging an 18% import tax, a tariff on something like face masks, things that we need to get through this COVID-19 crisis. Coming up next, we're going to take a deep dive into British Columbia's experience with the carbon tax. Stay with us.
It's time for our deep dive. This is a part of the show where we look deeper into important issues. And Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is so sure that a carbon tax will work that he raised it right in the middle of the COVID-19 crisis. So we decided to take a look back at the BC experience because it's been experimenting with a carbon tax for more than a decade. Chris, you live there, so I thought I'd talk to you about that. How's the carbon tax working out in BC?
All right, so before we get to any of the numbers and all this stuff, I want to play a clip for you. Let's listen.
And tell people back in my constituency to get a pair of running shoes, buy some compact fluorescents, and get some weather stripping. Well, when the carbon tax kicks in, what, 3 years from now, it'll be 7 cents a liter. What do you think, Honorable Speaker, the cost of home heating fuel is going to be at that time? How are people in northern parts of British Columbia, people in on the Wild West Coast where the winds blow and the temperatures drop, what's the cost going to be to those people? Are they going to be able to catch a bus to come to Victoria to buy some weather stripping? No, they're not. They're going to have to get in their car and pay for that as well.
Wow, it kind of sounds like that guy doesn't like carbon taxes very much. Who is that?
That was BC Premier John Horgan way back when he was an opposition MLA in 2008. But here is what Premier Horgan is saying about the carbon tax nowadays.
I don't believe that British Columbians begrudge that penny a litre when they know it's going towards making sure that future generations have an environment that's sustainable and a world that we can all live in.
So before, Premier Horgan was completely opposed to a carbon tax. But now, it's just another penny. That's an Olympic-level political flip-flop. What happened in BC's carbon tax experiment that made him change his mind?
That's a good question, because the results here have been less than spectacular. Put bluntly, the carbon tax costs average people a ton of money, and it doesn't work. But let's explain why it doesn't work. So let's start with the emissions. Here's what former Premier Gordon Campbell said at a climate conference in Copenhagen. This was a couple of years after he first imposed the carbon tax in 2008.
So we have a legislative greenhouse gas reduction target of 33% by 2020. We also have interim targets. We're 6% by 2012, 16% by 2016. So we can measure our progress and make sure we adjust our activities if we have to do more.
Okay, so that was Premier Campbell. But it hasn't worked out that way, and you don't need to take our word for it. Here's what the Sierra Club wrote about BC's emissions back in 2018. Quote, BC's greenhouse gas emissions have risen in four of the last 5 years. And then they went on and they called BC's carbon tax a token effort. Now, keep in mind, the carbon tax takes more than $1 billion from us every year, and they're still calling it a token effort. So that was 2 years ago. Now BC's emissions have actually gone up 5 in the last 7 years. So again, we need to remember, then Premier Campbell said that we'd have a 30% reduction in emissions by 2020, by now. But if you look at BC before the carbon tax in 2006, we had 64.1 million tons of emissions. And in 2017, we had 64.4 million tons of emissions. So they're going up, not down.
So, and that's BC's own emissions data. That's coming right from the provincial government. Mm-hmm. And it shows not only that BC is not on track to hit its targets, but rather emissions are actually going up. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the same thing is happening at the federal level with the carbon tax and emissions. The investigative journalism website Blacklock's Reporter found that emissions went up by 15 million tons in 2018. And that's exactly the first year the federal carbon tax was in effect for the whole year. But some carbon tax advocates, they slice and dice those numbers and they say, well, but if it hadn't been for the carbon tax, emissions would have been even higher. What do you say to that?
I say that's goalpost moving. They told us straight up back when they first imposed this carbon tax on us that emissions would go down. And so now they can't go back and say, oh, well, per capita or otherwise would have been, because then you're just trying to imagine things and predict the future. The bottom line is politicians said the carbon tax would reduce emissions. Emissions have gone up. Even the Sierra Club has the integrity to acknowledge that fact.
So it doesn't look like this a dramatic emissions cut is behind Horgan's huge flip-flop. Emissions are going up. So there must be something else. Carbon tax advocates, they often make a lot of economic promises as well. How's the carbon tax working out financially in BC?
Yeah, this is a huge element of the carbon tax argument. You'll often get economists from different parts of the spectrum coming in and saying, oh, well, financially, and if you look at the revenue neutrality, so let's break that down. So when BC Liberal government first brought in the carbon tax, it promised it would be revenue neutral. So back in 2008, Finance Minister Carol Taylor said, quote, a revenue neutral carbon tax is the right thing for our province today and for the future, end quote. And then they touted it on the world stage. So here again is former Premier Campbell in 2010 from that summit in Copenhagen. He's explaining his revenue neutral carbon tax.
We're trying to take action in British Columbia. We have the first revenue neutral carbon tax in North America. I think it's actually, it could be the first revenue neutral carbon tax anywhere. But what that really says is, yes, we put a price on carbon. We're putting a price on something that's not good. And we're using all of those resources to reduce income tax, corporate income tax, personal income tax, and small business tax. And that actually, I think, sends the right kinds of messages we need to have the private sector and individuals move forward.
So the BC carbon tax started at 2.4 cents per liter of gasoline in 2008. And it went up by about a cent every single year. To offset that cost, the province initially announced tax cuts, such as 2% income tax cut for the bottom two brackets of earners and a 1% tax cut for business taxes. That was 2008.
So the government says, we're going to take a whole bunch of money through the carbon tax, but don't worry, you're going to get all that money back through other tax cuts. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm a suspicious person, but I'm a little bit skeptical. How'd that work out?
It's funny. You're not alone in your skepticism. So back when she was leader of the opposition, BC NDP's Carol James called this idea of revenue neutrality lipstick on a pig. She said that to a municipalities meeting. And at first, the government did do those straight corresponding tax cuts and business tax cuts. You can look at them in the budget documents. They're right there. But starting in 2012, they started playing with those budget books. The government started adding up all kinds of different tax measures, like random tax credits, to make them all add up to the money that was coming in through the carbon tax. So the Fraser Institute, if you want to do another deep dive on this, the Fraser Institute, they sifted through this big mess in a 2017 report. Taxpayers ended up paying about $865 million more because of the carbon tax between 2013 and 2019. That's not revenue neutral.
I think when they're saying revenue neutrality, they mean something else. It's called a shell game, where taxpayers put down their money and somehow it disappears into the government coffers.
Yeah.
Is that, am I getting that right? Is that what this is really looking like?
Yeah, you are. It's a shell game. I called it a parlor trick when I first stumbled across it myself. So I actually asked finance officials about this in a budget lockup. So in the budget update in 2017, I was going through the budget documents, and the budget documents showed all the money that taxpayers were paying in the carbon tax. It was about $1.2 billion here in BC. But then they put it in a box, and they said that this is how taxpayers are supposed to be getting their money back. They put the carbon tax revenue in a box, and then they filled it full of all these random tax credits, like a film tax credit and children's fitness tax credit, you name it. So I thought I was reading this wrong. It was my first time reading a BC budget document, so I actually asked an official about it. I said, can you explain this to me? Why are you putting all these random tax credits inside the carbon tax to make it balance out to zero? And he looked right at me and he said, quote, yes, that's right. This has always just been an accounting exercise. So British Columbians, they have to pay more for gas, but then the government pretends that they're going to get that money back because it's giving a tax break for a movie like Deadpool 2 to get shot in Vancouver.
That's an absolutely infuriating kind of sneaky.
It really is, but it gets worse, unfortunately. So when she became finance minister, the NDP's Carol James raised the carbon tax in 2017. She dropped the revenue neutral term altogether. They stopped detailing the carbon tax in the budget altogether. And now it's just a straight up revenue stream.
Hold on a second. Wasn't Carol James the person who called this scheme lipstick on a pig? And now she's the finance minister and she's just raising the carbon tax without any lipstick. It's just going up. Is she the same person?
Yes, that's her. It's synchronized flip-flopping on carbon taxes here in BC. It's really unbelievable sometimes, but you got to go back and look at the tapes yourself. So she said in 2017 that she wanted BC to be a carbon pricing leader. That means that she wanted to set the standard in Canada for the highest carbon taxes. Lipstick on a pig indeed.
So let's check one more thing.
Okay.
So Prime Minister Trudeau, he likes to go around the world, talk about Canada's carbon tax plan, because he's promising us we'll lead, they'll follow. The rest of the world will see our carbon tax, they'll love it, and they'll do the same thing in their countries. How's that working on BC? What are BC's neighbors doing?
Well, over to the east, former Alberta Premier Rachel Notley, she imposed a carbon tax there in 2017, and then she lost the 2019 election. Premier Jason Kenney got rid of the carbon tax in Alberta, and that province just won a big court fight against the federal carbon tax.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a limb here. I think it's pretty safe to say that BC has not convinced Albertans that a carbon tax is a good idea. I don't think they've made that sale.
Our cousins are not hearing our argument, no. And BC's other major neighbor, actually, Washington State, they're not buying into our carbon tax idea either. In 2016, Washington had a referendum on the carbon tax, and voters rejected it soundly. In 2018, they wouldn't take no for an answer, Washington held another referendum on the carbon tax, and again, 56% rejected it. So if Washington State isn't following BC's lead on the carbon tax, probably won't happen in Oklahoma or New Jersey, let alone China or India.
So let's recap here.
Okay.
BC's carbon tax hasn't stopped emissions from going up.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been revenue neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't convinced its neighbors to go along for the ride.
Nope.
Is there any good news in the BC carbon tax experiment?
Well, people are really struggling right now with COVID-19, as we are across the rest of the country. And to give credit where it's due, Premier Horgan did the right thing. He hit pause on the scheduled BC carbon tax hike. He stopped that tax hike for now.
You know, we can disagree with Premier Horgan about a lot of different things, but people really are struggling. the last thing they need is a tax hike on anything. Good of him to put all these kind of differences aside and hit pause on the carbon tax hike there. But really, that does make me more frustrated with Prime Minister Trudeau. He knows everybody's struggling as well. And he raised the carbon tax in the middle of the COVID crisis, despite those struggles. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we're fighting the carbon tax on every level. In fact, we're going all the way up to the Supreme Court to fight the carbon tax. We're the only non-government organization there to say, nope, a carbon tax is a bad idea. If you want to know more about that, check out the show notes. Go over to taxpayer.com and get into the fight against the carbon tax.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Sorry for interrupting the podcast, but I wanted to take a few seconds of your time to tell you more about the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. We are 235,000 Canadians from coast to coast that are fed up. We are fed up with politicians taking too much out of our paychecks, often to waste it on a bunch of pet projects, corporate welfare, and pork barreling to buy votes. We organize campaigns to push back on these politicians. These campaigns often include petition drives, billboards, media stunts, and more. But most importantly, they ask our supporters to pitch in and take action. Alone, we're a voice in the wilderness. Together, we're an army to be reckoned with. You can join the fight and sign up at no cost at taxpayer.com. That website again is taxpayer.com. Okay, now back to the podcast.
It's time for Waste Watch. This is when we make fun of the dumb things that governments are spending your money on. Todd, what do you have for us today?
You know, Chris, there is one group of people in the city of Toronto that you do not want to mess with.
Organized crime?
Well, yeah, don't mess with them either. But the people I'm talking about are seniors. Let me play a quick clip for you.
I think it's ridiculous. We've been playing here for so many years. We're old people and we have a place to go, and you're going to take that away from us. And I think it's really sad.
So that was Anne Wamba speaking to the Toronto Sun. And I think it's pretty obvious from her tone of voice is she is in no mood for any more nonsense from anybody.
But okay, whoa. Who would want to pick a fight with seniors?
The bureaucrats at Toronto City Hall, that's who. So they decided to take on some folks at the senior centers because they were playing the card game Euchre and everybody was putting $1.25 in the pot. Although I should say people could also play for free if they forgot their money. It was not really a big deal. But the bureaucrats got wind of this and they decided to investigate because this could be an illegal gambling ring.
Okay. So just to be clear, the city of Toronto, their bureaucrats, they were investigating old folks, seniors, for illegal gambling because they were putting $1.25 in to play Euchre?
Oh, man. City Hall officials, they jumped all over these seniors. The Parks and Rec Department got involved. The legal department jumped into it with their lawyers. They were sending consultations over to the Ontario Alcohol and Gaming Commission. They're putting up signs at the senior center banning these games.
Oh, my gosh.
They even sent an email to one of these little old ladies and told her, quote, gambling is a violation under the Criminal Code of Canada.
Oh, okay, that's some tough talk. So did they scare these seniors off?
No, they didn't scare these seniors. These folks lived through the Great Depression. They're not going to take this nonsense from some whippersnapper bureaucrats. Here's what one of these seniors emailed right back to City Hall. This is starting to become an insane project, creating an absolute waste of your time and our money and our taxes.
Amen.
He was having none of this. So the Toronto Sun, to its credit, jumped on this story and they asked Mayor John Tory for a comment. To his credit, here's what Mayor John Tory said back. Quote, I've asked the general manager of Parks and Recreation to stand down and reassign the anti-fun police.
Good for him. Okay, so Mayor Tory actually called these jokers the anti-fun police, told them to stand down, so then it all worked out?
No, it didn't all work out. So we decided to check into this, and we filed a bunch of Freedom of Information requests to get all of the city's documents on this nonsense. There was 186 pages.
Oh.
The bureaucrats racked up 186 pages worth of nonsense and wasted all this time and money before the mayor even had a chance to tap the brakes on it.
Okay, so that's a lot of wasted time and money for taxpayers. But when this is all said and done, did they at least learn their lesson? Did they back off? Did they leave the seniors alone?
Well, you would think so, right? Because if my boss said, you're being the anti-fun police, tone it down. Especially if he said it in the newspaper.
Yeah.
I hope I would catch that hint.
Right.
But no, we checked it out. We made another call to City Hall just to see where this is at. And they confirmed that they're continuing to review this.
What? But like you said, their boss, the mayor, called off the anti-fun police. They called them the anti-fun police and told them to stand down. So why are they still reviewing this?
Why indeed? Why indeed? This dangerous criminal ring of illegal gamblers playing euchre for $1.25. Not going to let it go. So we gave a Teddy Waste Award to the City of Toronto.
Good.
Because every year we give awards out for the dumbest, funniest examples of government waste and producing 186 pages of documents to check into seniors playing euchre. Yeah, that's award-winning waste. So the City of Toronto, it got its Teddy Waste Award this year.
Indeed. They get the left and right bower on that waste. That is unbelievable. A well-deserved Teddy Waste Award. But you know, this, we try to laugh about this because otherwise you'd cry. This is why this matters. We're paying bureaucrats to work for us. I don't think there's a single taxpayer out there who would willingly pay their money to have bureaucrats crack down on seniors playing cards.
Well, that's exactly right. And even worse, we've got seniors in our communities who have real needs, honest to goodness needs. And if bureaucrats have time on their hands, if they've got nothing else to do, they need to focus on helping folks with those real needs rather than fooling around and telling grown adults what they can do with their $1.25 when they're playing cards. It's absolutely unacceptable. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of resources that need to go to the right place. So that's why we make fun of this stuff. The bureaucrats hate that. They hate that more than anything when we make fun of them for doing things like this. So yeah, we're going to keep making fun of them. If you do something dumb enough, like investigating illegal gambling at a senior center, yeah, you're going to get made fun of. That's why this is important.
Thanks for listening to the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast.
Check out the show notes for more information about all of the episode stories. Please subscribe, like, share, review our show. It helps us out huge. It helps us get the word to more people.
Special thanks to our investigative reporter, James Wood, for finding out about that 18% tariff on the masks. We'd also like to thank James for editing this show.
James is an absolute miracle worker. You would not believe how many ums and ahs and stumbles he edits out for me. So thank you very much to James. And thanks again to all of you for listening to our show.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. If you've got another minute, I'd like to ask you to think about the one person you know that would really enjoy listening to this podcast. Do us a favor and do them a favor and send them a quick note to let them know about it. At the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we believe there is power in numbers. That's why we've worked so hard to build an army of taxpayers who are ready to push back. And we did it because people like you shared our work with that one person that they knew would really appreciate taking part. Thanks for listening, and thanks for doing your part to make Canada a better place.